rolling.
All right, welcome to another episode of All Damn Night. I am your host, Brandon Richardson, and your co-host,
Sean Demers. Thanks again for having me.
Always good to have you, Sean. So what this podcast is we go find a story from music history. I write a script on it, do the research, and Sean has no idea what it is, do you?
No, I've never heard the story before.
So we
I'm very anxious today.
So we go over the story, riff on it, have a good time, and everyone goes home a little wiser, a little wealthier. Not really wealthier.
A little drunker.
Yeah, a little drunker, definitely. Absolutely. So welcome to the show. We're not particularly uniquely qualified to talk about any of this stuff, but fuck it. We're going to do it anyways.
Yeah, why not?
All right. So without further ado, welcome.
Take it away.
To All Damn Night. Welcome to All Damn Night. All right, Sean. In January.
What do we got today?
Well, that's what you're going to find out. In January of this year, Chapo Guzman, the head of the Sinaloa drug cartel from Sinaloa, Mexico, go figure, was extradited to the United States after being captured for the third time. The previous two times.
Does that mean he escaped twice?
He escaped twice. Okay. That is what that means.
All right. So I thought it was only once.
The previous two times, El Chapo, or Shorty, took over the prisons he found himself in, bringing in friends, drugs, booze, prostitutes, and anything else he wanted whenever he wanted it.
Have you seen pictures of how he escaped, like the tunnel?
This last time, yeah. It's underneath
like
the
With a rail. Yeah, there's a...
It's got a little mini bike on it.
Right. It's insane. And they, I guess they had like professional survey equipment.
Yeah.
And hit their mark within like centimeters.
There had to have been inside collusion with the prison.
Maybe.
Well, if he's paying them off to let him bring everything else he wants in, there
That's
has
true.
To be. You know what I mean? There's... And I don't know if it's collusion or threats, blackmail, who knows? Combination
you know
of
what,
all three.
You know, I have a theory that just popped into my head. What if they, because he escaped already twice, what if they put a tracker on El Chapo, but his cartel could also track where he was?
You mean like let El Chapo lead them back to the cartel?
Well, they knew what prison he was in.
Yeah.
But maybe the prison wanted to keep eyes on him all the time, so they like put a tracker like around like an ankle bracelet or around him or something. But then the cartel picked up on that frequency and then just honed in right on into it with a tunnel.
I would guess there's. I think you got to flip your because like in America, it would be the government more powerful. I mean, yes, some people would argue this, all right. But for the purposes of our argument here, the government more powerful than the organized crime, right?
In America?
Yeah.
I mean, now maybe.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Yeah. And we can definitely go down the rabbit hole on whether or not that's entirely true. But for the purposes of our argument,
yeah, the government's more powerful.
Yes, than organized crime such as the mafia or even these drug cartels.
Right.
In Mexico, that's not the case. They are run, so it's flipped. It's the opposite. They are more powerful. So like, even if you do get in trouble, it's just for show.
You know what's weird, though, is that from what I've heard from a friend of mine who was a Mexican citizen, well, I guess he still is, he said that people looked up, like his elders and his family looked up to like people like El Chapo and Pablo Escobar.
They're Robin Hood characters.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you have to look at it from their perspective in that view because these people, and I have friends from, I think most of my friends are from like the Oaxaca area, but... originally, or in like a couple from
That's
Mexico
where the,
City.
Mayan ruins are, right?
Couldn't tell you that much about Oaxaca.
Okay.
I like their cheese. I love our Oaxacan fan base. A very strong Oaxacan fan base. If you're in Oaxaca, write to us. We love it there. But it's the places like El Chapo comes from are so poor that they've been doing this for generations, and that's a lot of times their only way to make any money.
Yeah, and they give a lot back to the community.
They did. Yeah, they did a lot of community services that the government wasn't providing.
Well, didn't Escobar build a soccer stadium?
Yeah, Escobar is a pretty analogous. Escobar is like the 80s version of El Chapo, and El Chapo, it's pretty analogous. Yeah, they did civil services that weren't being provided from anywhere else, and this guy come in. And if he Gave your kids a playground to play on and made the streets safer in your neighborhood.
All right. You're probably going to think this guy's, you know, A-OK.
Not too many questions about what he's doing in other neighborhoods.
Right.
El Chapo is actually one of the wealthiest people in the world. He routinely makes Forbes lists of the world's richest people
with an estimated
worth of $1 billion in 2009. However, the U.S. government...
That's probably interest.
Exactly. Yeah. So to give you an idea... The U.S. government is seeking $14 billion from him in forfeiture from narcotic sales.
And still, so that's conservative.
It's conservative. Yeah. So he's probably worth well north of $15 billion.
Yeah.
It would be a rough guess.
that's liquid assets, by the way.
Well, not powdered assets.
Well, at one point, I'm sure it was liquid.
That's true. Okay. So, fair enough. In accumulating his fortune... We won't go into how we have that knowledge.
We could talk briefly on a nightcap maybe about the production of cocaine.
It's actually pretty integral to if you're going to talk music history. It's essentially impossible to avoid talking narcotics.
Right,
and that's not entirely what this podcast is about, but the two are heavily intertwined, and knowing about one would supplement knowing about the other.
Right. For sure. Except for like a select
Not
few.
Encouraging anyone out there to go out and learn about drugs. If you want to learn about drugs, you do it through our podcast.
Yeah.
We teach you here.
Isn't Ted Nugent sober?
Yes, he is. Yeah,
entirely. And then who's the Angus?
Angus Young is also entirely sober. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't believe either have ever had any. I think they've always been
entirely
teetotalers. There's other people too that they're not coming to mind at the moment.
But you know, 99% of rock stars.
I'm also of the opinion that like there's so much stupidity that's happened. Like has it opened the doors to some music that might not have happened? Yeah, but it also like Jimi Hendrix didn't have to die at 27.
No.
You know, it was like drugs haven't been all that great for music as a rule. Like they've definitely had some benefit, but
self-control is what it comes down to,
and that's true. And want to, you know, take whatever side of the fence you want to be on like being pro drug or anti drug, intertwining with music is just undeniable.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter where you go in the annals of music history, from time immemorial, they've been connected. So Chapo was worth roughly, we're guessing, $15 billion. A fuck ton of money is the scientific term. In accumulating his fortune.
A fuck ton.
Yes, it's on the. If you Google it, there's a chart. Chapo became a folk hero of sorts in his native Sinaloa. He came from severe poverty, rose to prominence in the drug trade, eluded the notoriously corrupt Mexican government for decades, and did, in fact, give back to those in need from his beloved hometown.
So burning the candle at both ends, he made it pretty far.
Definitely. At least being very conscientious of his public image.
Yeah.
And that's, he comes from a rich tradition, you could say. That's what they do in Sinaloa for time immemorial, to use that phrase twice in one podcast,
to grow poppy
and marijuana. That's what they do up in the hills, and that's how his family, his grandfather and his father and him made their living. And they didn't make a very good living at it until Chapo decided to...
Yeah, the farmers never make that.
No, yeah. So that's why he's seen as such a kind of rags-to-riches... I wouldn't even say that a lot of people think of him as a hero. They think of him as a benefactor.
What do you mean?
Like, they don't think of him like, he's a morally stand-up guy. He's just guy that is able to do good things for them, and he does.
They know that he does bad stuff.
Yeah, these,
but he's basically buying them out. He's paying them off with, you know, improving their neighborhoods and quality of life.
And when you're living on a handful of American dollars a day... It's something that would be difficult to probably fully grasp that perspective if you're not there. So something you want to be real careful about, vilifying the people that are taking advantage of the stuff that he is doing.
It doesn't seem like they're taking advantage of it, rather it's than real gray area. Surviving. Yeah.
Yeah, like if he's providing, you know, food handouts and you're starving, are you going to turn your nose up at the food handouts because he's a drug dealer?
Who was the other guy? Frank Miller? Frank something? The big heroin guy?
Oh, you mean the guy from American Gangster?
Yeah.
Yeah, Frank, I think that was it. Frank Miller?
I don't know. I can't remember his last name, but he would give out, like, truckloads of turkeys on Thanksgiving and things like that.
Yeah. And, like, nobody else was doing that in those communities, so it became a real distorted area on how he was viewed in the place that he came from. However, Chapo, however benevolent he was seen as, he was also a monster. He is responsible for countless deaths, horrific torture, and murder of his enemies and totally innocent people, many of them children. Drive-bys, stranglings, execution-style shootings, burning alive, burying alive, and beheading are all routine in this ruthless world created by the massive demand for drugs and the massive attempts to stop drug sales and drug use. In a little over a decade, the war on drugs has cost roughly 60,000 American lives, and that stat's from a couple of years ago.
Right, and what's one life worth?
Yeah, well, it's like Joseph Stalin said, one life is a tragedy. One death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. It's tough to really grasp it. And there's so many more than 60,000 have died by now. But the scale is if you want to look at what's happening, it's not to the scale of Syria, but it is Middle East it is comparable. It's analogous.
Let's think for a minute if we didn't have the war on drugs, though. It would be just as easy to get narcotics in America.
100%.
But they would be cheaper and a lot less people would die.
A lot safer.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, I mean, in case you're wondering, yeah, this is maybe a long-form argument in the war against drugs. But it's also a very informative podcast on music history. obviously this hasn't stopped. The 60,000 Mexican lives. That's Mexican lives, not Latino, not El Salvadorian, just Venezuelan, Colombian, Brazilian, at all lives that have been lost. So despite all the loss of life, it hasn't stopped him from becoming a modern-day Robin Hood to many. And like any good folk hero, El Chapo and many, many other drug kingpins are hailed and memorialized in a style of music that is based both in traditional Mexican music and lyrics that in English would be characterized as gangster rap.
What is it?
This is a world where music and murder can be and often are dangerously intertwined, where violence is glamorized, death is trivialized, and the line between life and legend is often blurred. This is the world of narco corridos. Yes,
okay.
Sir. Music and melodies, polka. There's a real. I got this all whacked out in the way that I wrote it, but polka combined with
accordions.
Yeah, like the polka instrumentation combined with gangster rap combined with Tejano beats.
Okay. Are they singing or rapping?
It is mostly there's becoming a trend towards a little bit more rapping.
Okay.
Lately, like a little bit, but like a lot of it is based in the folk singing style, like the Mexican folk singing style. So like multiple harmonies, two or three part harmonies going on, real kind of lilting vocals,
major keys, ones and fives,
boom, bum, 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 and I'll tell you the whole genesis for this this podcast was I grew up in Merced, California, which is in the center of the San Joaquin Valley, heavily Latino. Most of my friends growing up were Latino from Mexico or El Salvador mostly, but most of the food when we go out would be, when we go eat, would be the Mexican restaurants. Because the one thing Merced has is awesome Mexican.
Authentic cool Mexican place, restaurants? Or Mexican restaurants like we get here in Texas?
Hardcore. No. Like, it is great. Actually, a quick shout out to El Asadero Taco Shop, 3252 North G Street in Merced.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Love that place. So, Carnitas Burrito, dude.
You're hoping, banking pretty hard on getting some free tacos next time you go in.
We love the people at El Asadero.
Hey, let's do a podcast from there.
I would fucking love it. You would love El Asadero, dude. And our Carnitas Burrito in El Asadero is a huge burrito with just carne asada and guacamole, and then they grill it shut.
It sounds awesome.
That's it, sir.
Sauce on it?
If you want. They got a salsa bar.
No, do they put sauce over the top?
No.
No?
No. I mean, if you want it, you can have it, but like they that sucker in a big thing of foil, and you get a horchata.
Oh, wow.
When you go home, you get three tall cans of Coors Light, and you go home, and you watch a football game, and that's how you live in Merced, dude. Hell yeah.
That sounds pretty nice.
It is lovely.
It sounds like a nice provincial life.
Fucking love it. So, that love El Asadero Taco Shop. But I was hanging out there, and they were playing this music there on the satellite radio, and my buddy, who is he's from Mexico City, and he came here, he was like, you know what this music is about? I'm going like, I don't know. Fucking.
So I'm picturing, you know, a lot of, I guess, Tejano and Mexican people here in Texas play this, like, upbeat, major keyed.
Right.
Mixed between, like, polka and pop.
Right.
And it's all in, like, essentially the same key. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're singing about really happy stuff.
Now, I want to, that's where you want to be real clear. Those are corridos.
Okay.
Narco corridos is what makes it a drug song. But the corridos themselves are not inherently narco corridos.
But what's interesting about that music is that a lot of the messages in the songs are extremely sad.
Oh, very intense.
They have these major keys, but it's about like losing your lover dies,
right,
and you're mourning her forever.
Very akin to like country lyrics.
But it sounds so happy, so it's confusing. Yep. A lot of people who were oblivious to the culture would just overlook it entirely. Right. Yeah, and might even think it's...
Seems to be a lot of juxtaposition with the celebratory and the sad. They get like Dia de los Muertos.
You know, that's weird because, yeah, like when they celebrate a life at a funeral in like New Orleans, they have like a parade and everybody gets fucked up and it's all happy, you know?
And this is kind of another example of maybe the even ultimate example of like combining the kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, nostalgic or reverent. A tip of the hat to the past with combining the traditional beats with and the traditional melodies with lyrics that represent the world that is directly in front of these people.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. Where's the accordion from, though? Is it Europe?
Boy, I don't
Italy,
know
France,
enough to speak on that.
Maybe Italy or France, maybe Spain.
I have no idea how that got incorporated. There's a pretty substantial German contingent moved to Mexico.
Well, yeah.
But I have no idea if that
had
anything
to do
with it. A bunch of
Germans moved to Texas, too.
Hell yeah.
Huh.
Over in, we're in Austin, Texas, and, well, basically most of the hill country around here was founded by Germans.
Basically all of it. You know, Shiner Brewery in Shiner, Texas is...
Hauling their craft beer and accordions everywhere they go. Yeah. But no, so like a lot of these lyrics are, they've got these jaunty beats, like bum, 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 like you're saying, major keys. They sound...
It sounds like party, happy, you know, go-lucky music.
But check out some of these lyrics. So from, let's see, from, these are from a guy we're going to talk about, El Comendor. Tough for me to say. But, con un cuervo de chivo. And for like a quick disclaimer, forgive all my terrible Spanish. Doing my best, okay? All right.
He's a history major. Yeah. He only had to take 2 years.
I took a couple of Spanish classes. Okay. Con un cuerno de chivo y bazooka en la nuca, volando cabezas al que atraviesa. Means.
I heard bazooka.
Yes, sir, you did.
Bazooka to the head.
With an AK and a bazooka taking aim, blowing off heads of whoever gets in the way. Set that to a polka beat?
Right.
Are you fucking kidding
me?
That
sounds insane.
It's nuts. So, one more here while I can continually mangle the Spanish language. Con un AR-15 en mano y un morral con granadas. En cada pierna una escuadra y su chaleco de malla, todo vestido de negro, listo para la batalla. Means, with an AR-15 in hand and a satchel of grenades, a pistol on each leg and a bulletproof vest, dressed in black, ready for battle. These are fucking ballin' lyrics.
So definitely the parental advisory on these albums.
These are quite graphic songs, yes.
Even in America, there aren't very many songs even that
rough. It'd be tough. You'd have to go at kind of the underground
gangster rap scene. Pretty much all that we get in the mainstream is, you know, fucking bitches doing drugs and, you know, and killing people or this stuff is, like that. But not specifics like that.
Right. And they're getting into, and I mean, like, as bad as the drug war is in America, it's like more, it's obviously more intense.
We're not even, you know, thinking about, what about the southern border of Mexico?
Right, that's what I was saying, like, El Salvador, and then, like, and then southern, or South America countries, like Venezuela, and, Colombia, and Brazil. It's a bad scene, and a lot of people are going to continually come back to this, I think, listening to this podcast and say, like, well, this is because of America's demand for drugs. Fucking A. Yes, it is.
The whole world.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sure. And Europe. Yes, it is. But, well, then what's your solution? Like, are you going to stop that demand?
No.
That's going to be tough.
You're not going to. And you can't halt the production of a plant.
We find ourselves in this world.
Yeah.
Where often, and actually a lot of these lyrics are commissioned by drug lords themselves to increase their own notoriety and reputation on the street. So they'll hire a guy. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Right. Narcocorridos are currently
El Commander is not the captain then, apparently.
Well.
What's the rank in the Navy? Is it Captain Commander?
Oh, in the Navy? It goes Admiral. So it would go, one of my best friends is in the Navy.
It's a Captain, Admiral, then Commander. Or like
James Bond. I don't even want to hazard a guess.
Well, like James Bond's a commander. James Bond's a commander.
Is he?
He certainly is. Yeah.
James Bond is a commander.
He definitely is. Commander Bond.
Really?
100%.
You think he's a Narcocorrido star?
I don't think he's even in the Navy.
I don't see Sean Connery pulling off Narcocorridos very well. Maybe Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, well, maybe. But what's the one where he goes to Dr. No? I think it's Dr. No, where he goes to, like, the Caribbean, or Haiti, I think. And they're dealing
with... I think you're making it up.
I don't know. I
mean, no, you're making this up.
Does anybody have Ian Fleming's number?
Yeah, well, let's call him. I'm sure someone out there does.
I think his wife or his daughter has the rights to all of it, I think, now, but...
Well, if you're Ian Fleming's daughter and you're out there listening, as I'm sure that you are,
she's probably at that taco place you're talking about in California.
Yeah. Mrs. Fleming. Miss Fleming. Twitter.com/alldamnnight. Holla at your boy. They're often commissioned by drug lords. Narcocorridos are currently banned on Mexican radio, but they have become an internet sensation, complete with some of the craziest music videos ever made.
Oh, no.
Ever. So we're going to pause real quick, and I'm going to show Sean a El Commander music video. So we just watched the music video for Tachycardio. So if you want to check us out on YouTube for yourself, this is Tachycardio by El Commander. You spell it Tachycardio. Tachycardio. Check it out. Possibly, top five? Greatest music videos of all time?
Maybe. What's cardio? Like tachycardio? What's that? Something with heart?
Heart attack.
Oh, okay. All right.
That I think it means it's like heart attack or, man, with the Spanish classes I've had, I should know. But it's like, I think something like heart attack. Because he does, in the music video, why don't you describe the music video a little bit? There's a man running around doing blow.
So it starts off pretty simple. You know, just a bunch of gangsters, and then it evolves into, you see, like, a crazy guy losing his mind doing so much coke. And then,
like, a lot. Not, like, not, so much. Like, we're, a 2x4 yeah, worth we're talking with a about, giant PVC pipe.
8 feet by 4 inches, you know,
all the
square.
While. Bum, bum, bum.
So, and then it evolves into that, and then they're breaking him out of a mental institution and fucking around on ATVs. But
I mean, not fucking around. Expertly riding them, popping wheelies.
There's some skill in that.
You're right. Yeah. Not expertly riding them. Kind of like drunken expert.
It's, like, we're not talking like Ricky Carmichael type motocross. No,
you're
stuff.
Right. That's that. I shouldn't say expert. It's more like if you were drunk and you managed to one time pull off this one ATV trick and they well, caught it on it.
Or
on
if
video.
You've had an ATV your entire life, you'd probably be able to do that. This.
Yeah. It's like popping a wheelie and like running behind it. And yeah. just, they've all got Ferrari jackets.
Yeah.
No one's wearing protective headgear.
No, definitely
no
not.
No one gives a shit.
So my take on the video is that El Commandor is playing the part of a drug lord.
Yes, and it's very glamorized, the lifestyle.
Yes,
yeah.
And the crazy guy is in his pocket for a 2x4's worth of cocaine.
Right, something in that neighborhood.
And he gets sent to the mental hospital, but to El Commandor, that's irrelevant. No matter where he is, no matter what happens, he's still going to get him. And either beat his money out of him or get his money back.
You know, with all the research that I did for this, I probably should have translated word for word the what Taquicardia is about, but I didn't. So if you do speak Spanish and you know what it's about, hit us up, twitter.com.
It's
got to
be a heart attack, right?
It's got to be. And I mean, like, I'm confident in that. Really, folks, we did extensive research, but you can only look so deep. You can
all
only
right.
do so much, cover
I
so
mean,
many corners.
We're only talking about an hour here.
Right, so. Exactly. So, from Wikipedia here, the first corridos that focused on drug smugglers. This is the beginnings. We're going to talk about the beginnings of narco corridos before they became the internet sensation and source of some of the greatest music videos ever.
Oh yeah,
yeah. The first corridos were the first corridos that focused on drug smugglers have been dated by Juan Ramirez Pimienta to the 1930s. Early corridos that are non-narco go back as far as the Mexican Revolution of 1910.
So was the people in power, like the Robin Hood figures, were
yeah,
they writing
it's,
songs
it's,
about them even
yeah,
back then?
Yeah, pretty similar to that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
So, like, they're storytelling songs. And like you said, like, some of them are about lost love, some of them are about sad stories.
Right.
But, yeah, some of them are about heroic figures or folk
okay.
heroes, and then the ones that we're just making this point that narco corridos and corridos are not the same thing. Not all corridos
right.
are narco corridos.
Right.
And that is something that we don't want to confuse because we don't want to conflate a a traditional what would you say honorable or
very cultural. I guess it's from generations past, like, it was really deep in the culture.
We don't want to
yeah.
muddy the waters
no,
of traditional
not.
Corridos
no.
by saying that they're all narco corridos. but the real pickup of the narco corrido game came with Los Tigres del Norte. And I remember the guy that I was at the taco shop, Andres, with. I was at the taco shop with my buddy Andres, and his buddy, or his dad, was a huge Los Tigres del Norte fan. Had all the,
oh,
all
wow.
the CDs of Los Tigres del Norte. The group was started by Jorge Hernandez and his brothers and his cousins. They then began recording after moving to San Jose, California in the late 1960s when all the members were still in their teens. They were sponsored by a local record company, Discos Fama, owned by an Englishman named Art Walker, who took them under his wing.
Art Walker.
Yes, I'm a promoter of Discos Fama. He took them under his wing.
I used to hang out at the art factory back in the day with Andy
San
Warhol.
Jose. With Los Tigres del Norte. It was quite lovely, really. He took them under his wing, and he got them recording and helped them with all their early albums. The Tigres were at first... That was from Wikipedia, by the way. And
that accent? You got that off Wikipedia?
Yes.
That's
yes.
impressive. I'm going to start going there, frequenting that website.
Many hours. Los Tigres were at first only popular locally, but took off after Jorge and Art Walker heard a Los Angeles mariachi singer perform a song in the early 1971 about a couple of drug runners, Emilio Varela and Camelia La Tejana. there had been occasional ballads about cross-border drug trades ever since Prohibition in the 1920s, but never a song as cinematic as this, featuring a woman smuggler who shoots the man and takes off with the money. After getting permission to record the song, Los Tigres del Norte released Contrabando y Traición. Contraband and Betrayal.
Oh, wow.
They released that in 1974.
Sounds so romantic, though. You know, it like, all sounds romantic. Film noir, like...
It's a romance language.
Yeah, man.
The song quickly hit number one, or quickly hit on both sides of the border, inspired a series of movies, and kicked off one of the most remarkable careers in Spanish language music.
Mm.
The more you know. Pew! A little star over my head. No, they're a huge band, and we're going to touch back on what they're doing nowadays here in a minute, so... Hang tough for the update on the Los Tigres del Norte. But the guy that came along and like was the shooting star in Narco Corridos was Chalino Sanchez. And we'll show you a picture of him real quick. You can see that he has a cowboy hat and silver-plated pistols and loves large pickup trucks. Pretty much the coolest guy on the planet. If you think of, like, what you would think a superstar Narco Corrido singer looks like, that's Chalino Sanchez. What you're imagining? Google him. He looks exactly like what you're imagining. Just a badass, gold-plated pistols, cowboy hat, Rolex.
It looks
no
like...
No time for bullshit.
It looks like a... It almost like somebody made it up.
Yeah.
It looks like a poster that's fake. It looks so extravagant and just over the top, flashy.
He looks like the Narco Corridos version of like Waylon Jennings. We're like, that's a real dude. Did someone like genetically engineer him in a country music lab somewhere? No, he looks like he's
that's
made.
That's an interesting
music.
Side note. I'd like to go to a country music lab.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I wager it looks a lot like Breaking Bad.
There's probably,
an RV out in the middle of the desert.
A lot of animal testing going on.
You don't want to, yeah. And not the type you're thinking.
Well, what type were we thinking?
I don't want to get into it. That's a totally different type of podcast. Google redneck animal testing podcast for that. Pretty sure I saw that on the charts. Chalino had gotten his start by writing these kind of personalized folk songs for local drug lords. Basically, they would commission him to write a song about how badass and awesome they were. Eventually, enough people in Southern California and Mexico, especially in the Los Angeles area, heard his work, and then he became a sensation. His music combined tubas, clarinets, and waltzy rhythms with stories about cocaine, drug smuggling, getting drunk, and shooting motherfuckers who did him wrong.
That sounds awesome.
Yes, sir, Chalino Sanchez. Carrying the flag. Promo pictures of him in cowboy hats pointing silver-plated pistols out the windows of high-end Chevy pickups paint a picture of a man who lived on the edge. And that's just what Chalino did until one night.
Was his truck gold-plated?
I think everything he had was gold-plated.
Oh, that's interesting.
Even his gold was gold-plated.
Even his alligator boots were gold-plated?
He had the alligator gold-plated before
and then
he was
made
killed
into
in the
boots.
Oh, the boots. Yes, sir.
He has a swamp full of gold alligators.
Yeah, swimming in golden swamp water.
That's impressive.
Yes,
man.
Sir. Until
it kind of makes you want to be a drug dealer.
I think this whole podcast... No. Nothing about this should make you want to be a drug dealer. Because one night... until one night in Culiacán. There we go. Culiacán. It's tough. I'm telling you, I'm doing my best. After the show, Chalino and his entourage were pulled over by men who claimed to be the state police. They arrested Chalino.
No way.
Yeah. Don't ever put the flashers on. Wait till you get to a Chevron. Like, not a good idea. If you're leaving a Narco Corrido concert, always wait till you're in a well-lit area. Put the flashers on. Don't roll it on your window. Press the ID up against the window. All that stuff. Let's see. They claimed to be state police. They arrested Chalino and took him away. The next morning, Chalino's body was found in an irrigation canal outside town. He had been blindfolded and because of rope marks on his wrist, presumably tied up and shot twice in the head before being dumped in the canal.
Oh, wow.
Since
could have been a lot worse.
I guess so. That's an optimistic view on murder.
Right.
Sean the Optimist. Always with a little rainbow over his head. You should show up. You should be like a superhero that shows up in disaster. And be like, could have been worse.
Could have been worse.
The most hated man in the world. Oh my God. The most hated man in the world. That's what you would be. Since then, Chilino Sanchez has passed into legend, and many, many people who followed in his footsteps have themselves paid a very hefty price. And this is a uniquely heavy, what would you call it, casualty list for an artist of a particular genre.
So all these guys that played this music are getting killed?
I'm gonna go over a number of narco corrido artists who have been killed. It's mind-blowing. Let's see, number one here. First, on November 25th, 2006, Valentin Elizalde performed a concert at the State Fair in Reynosa, Tamaulipas. His last song at the concert was a song titled Para Mis Enemigos, which means For My Enemies, the lyrics which are allegedly about attacking members of the Ghost Cartel. 20 minutes after the concert, as he drove away from the venue, his car was ambushed by members of Los Zetas, who, if you know...
A different cartel.
Los Zetas are... At this point in the game, or like the people that are hired by the Sinaloa cartels to enforce and do hits.
So the dirty work for the cartel.
Yes, there you go.
Oh, wow.
And the real killing is done by Los Zetas.
That is some low-end, low-pay-grade type stuff. But again...
Let's try not to make too many enemies with our Los Zetas listeners, Sean. So 20 minutes after the concert, they opened fire on his black Suburban with automatic weapons. Elizalde, his manager, and his chauffeur were killed instantly. Elizalde was shot 20 times.
20 times.
Yes. And you'll notice, like, a common theme, he was nominated for a Grammy posthumously.
Okay.
Posthumous Grammy nominations abound in this list of people. Let's see. On February 18th, 2007.
Who else in America's like music has been nominated like that
posthumously?
Yeah.
Maybe Tupac and Biggie.
Leonard Skinner.
I don't think they got anything from Grammys.
No, not that far.
No. I don't know. Maybe Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Jimi Hendrix.
I don't know. Yeah. I just generally wouldn't. I'll tell you, if you want to get posthumously nominated for a Grammy, do Narco Corridos.
Narco Corridos, yeah, man, yeah.
That's the way to go.
I guess a lot of artists in the Renaissance weren't really appreciated in their time either, but it seems like these guys died before they had even a chance.
And the deal with these is it's not about not being appreciated, it's about being actively hunted down and murdered because they didn't agree with your lyrics.
Right. We're not all Robin Williams from Jumanji. If you have somebody hunting you...
certainly are not.
You're probably going to die.
And the thing to be clear about with all of these people is they're just artists. Like, they weren't drug dealers any more than Tupac or Biggie was.
They were getting paid tons of money and probably lots of free drugs and immunity from the cartel.
I don't even know that all the people were drug users.
Maybe not, but they were getting a whole bunch of money to sing praises about these people.
Yeah, but they sang, once you sing the praises of one, you piss off
the other. So you can't necessarily, go cross-platform with it.
Very volatile. Yeah. So another one here. On February 18th, 2007, after performing for a dance party in Matamoros, five members of Tecno Banda Fugaz were fired upon by gunmen with AK-47s. Carlos Gonzalez Hurtado, the band's leader, survived the attack. After being rushed to the hospital, all the rest of the members of the band, including Hurtado's son, died at that scene.
Oh wow!
So that's another whole band taken out.
Another the day the music died in Mexico.
I mean, there's several days the music died. Right. Another one, Zaida Peña Arjona, was the lead singer for the popular grupero band Zaida y Los Culpables. And the Culpables.
And the what?
The Culpables.
The Culpables.
Not a bad name.
That's pretty
cool.
That's
pretty good. It's pretty good. The band's popularity reached its peak with the song Tiro de Gracia. I'm sorry. Tiro de Gracia. Coup de Grace. About a woman's failed relationship. In 2007, Peña was staying in Matamoros, Tamaulipas, just near the Mexican-U.S. border. An unknown gunman opened fire on Peña, her friend, and a motel employee. Although Peña was shot in the back, she survived the attack. Her friend and the motel employee both died.
Wow.
I'm not done just taking a drink of water so I can finish this horrific paragraph. While resting in the medical facility after a successful operation to extract the bullet from her back.
Did they hunt her down again?
Sir,
oh,
two
man.
Gunmen entered the hospital, found her, and shot her point blank in the chest and face. She died instantly.
Jeez.
Yeah. They think that the reason it wasn't like because they hated her music is because her mom worked for a prosecutor's office.
Oh, okay.
And it's like it doesn't matter. They will come. That's the major difference between cartels and, say, the Italian mafia, or most of the traditional American organized crime families or organizations, Irish mafia.
It seems like they send, you know, low-end guys to do it that don't care about getting caught.
There's actually, I watched a lot of documentaries about the Los Zetas and how the kind of pipeline system, they actually have so much money. How mind-blowing is this? That they have recruited ex-special forces, ex-Mexican special forces soldiers.
Okay.
To train prospective Los Zetas recruits, and they take them out into camps. And they train them. So they're not low-end. They're not low-end knuckle draggers.
You know, on the, you know, relatively speaking, they're low on the totem pole.
Yes, but they're being paid very
super,
well. And they're
super
very young. They're all teenagers.
As well. Okay.
Because they're all taken and their minds are molded. And it's a very elaborate kind of feeder system. And so they have, it's a whole kind of subgroup of teenage killers. But it used to be, I guess it used to be
teenage
for a lot
killers.
Of money.
That's another cool band name.
I guess so. Until you watch the documentary about it, and it's kind of a bummer.
Right.
I mean, if you watch a documentary about anything, it's a fucking
Yeah.
Damn.
Jeez.
I tell you. That's why you have this podcast. We watch the documentary so you don't have to.
Right. You will never have to watch another documentary
again. We're strongly against documentaries. No, not really. We'll do one more here. Jose Luis Aquino was a trumpeter for the popular band group Los Conde, that also sang Narco Corrido songs. So it's like they just dabbled in Narco Corrido songs. Aquino had been missing for days before his body was finally found on December 8, 2007, half buried underneath a bridge in the state of Oaxaca, located in southern Mexico.
Man,
Aquino,
this whole episode is just people dying.
It's almost 60,000 people in a decade.
But I guess we have to you know, really tap into that to understand that these people are writing this music at such great risk.
And it's more or less
Does it make it more meaningful?
I think it makes it, it's kind of like a, chicken and the egg situation too. Cause it's like, I think it's definitely, you can say that the, corruption and crime and stuff came first, and then it, like the music, it leaked its way into the culture, and music is a byproduct of the culture, and that's kind of a byproduct of it. But you wonder, like, if it perpetuates itself, like if all these people singing about this stuff, if they hadn't done it, would they still be alive today?
Maybe.
In some cases, yes. In
they
some cases, maybe
they would have probably
gotten
into a different situation.
It depends if your mom is a prosecutor.
Yeah, right.
Maybe then it doesn't
matter.
You
know, what's interesting, too, is that we hear about, you know, stuff going on in London like this, but we don't hear about it from our neighbor in Mexico.
Yeah, that's for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's to keep the real cost of what's going on. I think if a lot of people had a real sense of the true scope of the violence that's going on there, that it would be
it's
terrifying. Have a different opinion.
It's definitely terrifying.
Yeah, it's a massive loss of life. That's like comparable. That's comparable to, I think, the Vietnam War. How many people died from the
Civil
United
War
States?
Was pretty intense.
600,000 people was a Civil War.
Okay.
Let's see, Vietnam War, U.S. casualties. I want to say that it's in the neighborhood of 60 grand or 60,000 people. Let's see. Yeah, and in the Vietnam conflict, there was 58,220 U.S. casualties in the Vietnam War.
Conservative.
That's a, you know, a pretty rough but pretty accurate estimate.
I guess it would be pretty accurate.
But that makes it comparable to the drug war.
Rambo found 25 more guys.
Yes, he did.
So we can bump that up to
That's a good point.
59,000.
I don't think anyone's going to doubt.
Nobody's going to argue that. Rambo, no. Rambo's going to, you know.
No one's going to shortchange the contribution of John Rambo to the United States government.
And not only citizens. That, surprisingly, after his tour in Afghanistan as well, he became an impeccable polo player.
I don't think that Rambo went. Did Rambo actually go to Afghanistan?
In the third one.
The third one, you're right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. He did. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah, Vietnam was the first one.
So let's.
No, the first one was. No, that was Jerkwater, USA.
Yeah, yeah, in like Pennsylvania or something. Let's see. Oh, yeah, so we're going to finish here with Jose Luis Aquino. Aquino had been found with his hands bound, his hands and feet bound. His head was wrapped in a black plastic bag. Evidence suggests he was beaten to death.
That's a hell of a way to go.
And like his bandmates said, they couldn't understand why this had happened. He was a good guy.
That's so weird. That
these people aren't like drug dealers. They're just people in bands, and they someone wants to extract revenge. So
instead of ending up on, Entertainment, the cover of Esquire or Entertainment Weekly at the, Walgreens, with a shitty picture and a terrible tabloid story, you get murdered.
Yep.
That's pretty bad.
Why
would anybody be a musician?
Because of the, when we watched that video on El Commander, the amount of money that you can make, this guy El Commander, if you YouTube El Commander, I guess.
But he is pissing money.
He's pissing money. And he's constantly flushing. He doesn't give a damn, dude.
He doesn't, if it's yellow, he does not let it
melt. He's got, no. He's got, prancing horses and Ferraris and...
And a dozen ATVs.
Oh,
he's got a whole fucking pyramid of jet skis.
All of his friends are ATV experts. They're out there popping wheelies. And again, not a dude that's sitting at home doing drugs all day. He's just like some...
Well, you can't get high on your own supply.
But he's not a drug dealer. He's just a singer.
Oh, so I'm confusing his persona in the video. Right. I'm saying that's real life.
But the real life person is just a guy just making music. He's not a drug dealer.
Oh, wow.
Or
So I guess you could say he's an actor.
In a way, yeah. He's like using the... He's expressing the extremity of the violence around him, I guess. But, I mean, it is banned on the radio, too.
Yeah.
So, people are not... The Mexican,
Elvis was banned.
Right. The Mexican government and all their infinite wisdom decide, this is going to perpetuate narco-corridos. Instead of actually doing anything to stop the cartels...
It probably made it worse.
Yeah. Well, instead of the Mexican government doing anything to stop the cartels, which they won't because they're in their pocket...
Then again, here comes that question again. Do you just let this rampant violence happen and do nothing about it? Do you stop just caring about the war on drugs? Do you stop caring about these cartels? I guess the morality side of the fence, you have to say, no, we have to do something.
Yeah, it's. I would say that something at least it's worth looking into more in depth than most people have.
Research it and then produce your own voice.
Yeah, the Mr. Mackey.
Produce your own opinion.
The Mr. Mackey take on things, I think, is what has created a lot of this. And this wasn't an argument for drugs. It's just saying that you are not the current war on drugs is an abject failure.
Yeah.
And it has cost lives comparable to what the Vietnam War cost the United States.
Yep.
And that is inexcusable.
Yeah. And on top of lives, there's also the monetary value that we could be spending on schools.
Oh, countless things. Yeah. And that's the thing. When you don't spend that money on schools, also the Mexican government isn't spending that money on schools. You know who is? El Chapo.
Yeah, that's right.
So it becomes a huge problem.
Man, so I guess you heard it here first, folks. If you want to be a good drug dealer, give back to your community.
Give back to your community. Actually, we're going to talk about, real quick, we're going to talk about a guy who was not such a good dude. His name was Santiago Mesa Lopez. He really stood out in the documentaries I watched because they called him El Pozolero. It means the stew maker.
Oh, the stew maker.
The stew maker. So what this guy did was he stayed in a big compound in Mexico, and the local drug lord paid him something like $600 a day to take.
That's a pretty hefty salary, though.
Pretty hefty salary, but yeah. Listen to the job description.
Well, must, what did he do? Make stew?
Must be able to lift 25 pounds or more.
25 pounds.
Must be able to stand for long periods.
Okay.
Okay. Must have OSHA certification.
All right. So, $600 a day. That sounds pretty good.
And then what we're going to do, Sean, for the $600 a day.
Yeah.
Is we'll go ahead and bring you all the people we murdered, and you can just dump.
Oh wait, this is starting to get really dark.
Oh, no, let me finish. We'll take all the people we murdered.
You know, I don't know if I'm too interested in this job.
Can I finish the job description, please?
I think this interview is
over. You showed up for the interview. I feel like you're wasting my time. No, so what they would do, they had the pocillero, the stew maker, take their bodies in this compound, dissolve them in vats of acid, and then dig giant holes in the compound yard and pour the sludge that would become, after a week or so, a human body would become sludge in this acid bath.
Well, Mythbusters did that thing with the pigs. So, yeah.
What did it turn into?
Sludge.
Yeah, sludge, right? And they dump that into holes. And then bury that. So there's just people sludge buried all over.
That sounds terrible.
It's about as terrible as it sounds, yeah.
Can we watch a video of that real quick? Or could we see any pictures of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. You want to see it?
Yeah.
So the pictures that we just saw, Sean thought were hilarious.
Well, you picture the stew maker, like this Italian guy in a big fucking hat. Hey, you know, like, making a pizza.
I studied my whole life, like, being a stew maker.
This big ore.
I'm making a people stew.
Yeah, in a cast iron cauldron. And he's kissing everybody.
A little touch of oregano. He's kissing everybody. Very hands-on guy. The stew maker.
But
no.
Holy shit. So first of all, they catch this guy, and he's got a look of despair on his face, like, please kill me.
Yeah, please kill me, because that's way better than what's going to happen to me now.
Yeah, and all of these, you know, Black Ops guys have got masks on.
Yeah,
and,
so that they don't get tracked down.
And sunglasses, and this poor guy, you know, he had no idea what he signed up for when he went to this job interview.
No, I don't think so. Well, as you experienced in our job interview simulation,
right.
Very realistic.
I mean, you know? I've had worse.
Well, I mean, the government catches him, but they don't catch the higher level guys. Like when they, like,
right.
We were talking during the break about how they go to inner cities here, find the guys on the corner dealing stuff. But
right. They just put a Band-Aid on it.
They're just treating the symptoms and not the cause.
Just like your local doctor.
Yes, sir. The government is actually trying to, but they're also, instead of going after the heads of the cartels, they are trying to shut down Narco Corridos on the airwaves, as we were talking about, and they're hitting bands with heavy fines if they play Narco Corridos live. So recently, the Tigres del Norte were fined $25,000 for performing Narco Corridos in Chihuahua. And after the show, many fans tweeted about the band being folk heroes for their stand against authority. So good publicity.
Yeah.
But still,
there's no such thing as bad publicity.
No, unless you're the Pocillero. Unless you're
the
Stewmaker.
Yeah, if you're a rock and roll band, like, if Guns N' Roses got fined for playing a show, that would just make them more popular.
And you're going to make more money off of that. Yeah.
By the way, Guns N' Roses coming up September 8th.
Yes, sir. That's going to be awesome.
I think that's a little Easter egg, you know, stay tuned.
You're definitely going to want to stay tuned for the podcast that'll be coming.
Maybe a live, follow-up podcast.
There will be some
from the event itself.
Definitely some live updates from the Guns N' Roses concert. Follow us on Instagram.com/alldamnnightpodcast for a couple live feeds if you want. Don't want to miss out on that. So, yeah, they're going after the bands and trying to hit them with big fines. Big shocker, it's not working at all. Narcos are only getting more popular, and the violence is not even close to stopping. April 17th, 2017. Cartel
That's
members...
That's pretty recently.
Very recently. This is July 10th, we're recording this, 2017, so a couple months ago. 3 months ago?
Yeah.
3 months ago, something like that. Cartel members broke into a home in Tamaulipas, Mexico. They went around the entire property and shot all four members of the Huerta family who lived there. The entire family.
That's terrible.
Jose Esteban Huerta, 37. His wife, Yolanda de la Cruz Urbina, 40. Their daughter, 19-year-old Yahira Elizabeth Huerta de la Cruz, and 2-year-old Jose Romero Huerta de la Cruz, Shot them all.
It's terrible.
Walked around the perimeter of the property.
Cold-blooded killers, man.
It is a...
It's a bummer.
It's a full-on whore. And this isn't like a condemnation of Mexico in any way. It's just saying the situation in Mexico is dire.
Yeah.
Like, it is a bad situation. And, stopping people from playing some songs about it isn't going to fix it.
Well, could that, United States has a constitution that states you have freedom of speech.
We are incredibly unique in that. Yeah. Right? I don't think there's any other country in the world with real true free speech.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
And it's kind of a gray area here, even. You know, to be a good person, you can't just go around saying whatever the fuck you want. You have to have some lines.
The whole analogy is that is most often used with our Constitution is that you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
You can't make a call to action. I can't say, we should all go kill Sean.
Let's not.
No, let's try it. I'm anti Sean killing mob. But short of that, you can say anything you want. That is not the case in virtually any other country, and definitely not the case in Mexico.
Right.
Especially when it comes to speaking out against, like we said, this is a flip upside down world where the organized crime controls the government.
Yeah.
It's not the government paying off. I mean, it's not organized crime paying off the government to be left alone. Organized crime is bigger than the government.
Despite all of the violence and killing, it's almost comical.
How would that be?
Well.
It is a bucket of chuckles. You're right.
Laughable. It's a laughing stock.
Yeah,
every aspect of the government is corrupt.
Yeah, is every single person in the government corrupt? No, but
you got to remember that almost the entire country is just normal civilians.
Yeah.
Trying to get by, and they're gonna follow whoever provides for them. So,
like we said, if El Chapo was installing the playground or the, civil works program, that the government is not, and it's not advocating that the government provide everything, but it's saying like in this situation, truly they are shorthanding their citizens by letting them be run by drug cartels and letting violence. Be violence and strong handing be the what wins the day at the end of the day in Mexico right now. And it's not democracy. It's not what is best for the people. It's who has the most might equals right now.
It almost seems like money controls a lot of it too.
Yeah, I mean, most people will say like, well, what's the difference between that and any other country? What's the difference between that and America? And the difference is
money does control a lot.
Absolutely,
yeah.
But 60,000 people haven't died here,
right?
You know, like that's the thing we keep coming back to because that is just such a
massive number.
Massive number, and for what?
Nothing. Bragging rights,
territory,
terrorism tactics,
money.
Just saying, you know, having no morale whatsoever,
right?
Or morality. Excuse me. If someone makes a mistake, you just kill them. That doesn't make any sense.
And it is impossible to run a country that way.
From a business standpoint, it's very successful.
Yeah, it's the only way to run a drug empire.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a black market. And actually, there's one more story where an entire busload of students were lost. An entire busload of students went on a trip. And the mayor and the mayor's wife colluded with the police force to like look the other way. And
that's so bad.
Yeah, they disappeared, and I believe they were found, but the remains were, unrecognizable, undecipherable. Couldn't tell one from the other.
It's a totally different world that unless you've experienced it, you really have no comprehension.
Right. It's not surprising that the narco corridos exist, considering the environment that country is in at the moment.
Yeah.
And in the end, narco corridos are simply a representation of the world around them. and until major changes are made, not just in the U.S. domestic and foreign policy, but in Mexico and other countries throughout Central and South America, narco culture and the popularity of narco corridos will continue, and the end did not come with the capture of El Chapo. Sadly, it seems the violence, as soon as the end of the violence, is nowhere in sight.
Wow.
Bummer.
It's pretty heavy, man.
Heavy duty, but a hell of a music video.
Yeah.
If you want to see some awesome music videos, check out the Narco Corrido music video.
It's wildly entertaining.
They are. It's just going for the gold, man. What if we had this guy running with a wig down the street, and maybe he like pulls a little bit of drugs out of his pocket and does a little bit of drugs? Well, that's good. But what if we have this guy running with a giant afro and a tracksuit
in a street jacket,
and he does a 2x4 with a coke with a PVC pipe, and then he hops on an ATV and rides away? And they're just like, I like it.
The you entertainment should direct that music value video. Is very high. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, we'll give it that.
And if you can get ones with subtitles, if you don't speak Spanish, those are the best, because then you'll really get
it's
a feel
for it. It's not Spanish, though.
How do you figure?
It's Mexican.
It's Spanish. It's not Spanish. It's not Spain Spanish.
It's not what you would learn in school. Definitely not.
It's definitely filled with colloquialism, that's for sure. Like, yeah. Cuerno de Chivo is a goat horn, and that's what they call an AK-47. Yeah. So you gotta kind
of... Well, it's interesting they call it that, because the goat is the servant of the devil.
I think it has more to do with it looks like a goat horn, the magazine
that
coming
out.
That
could be, but maybe it has that whole gothic... metaphor to it.
A little tinge
a little,
to it.
A little bit of metaphor to it. Yeah.
Who knows? Whatever it is, the devil's got something to do with it now.
Yeah.
It's a bad situation, but crazy music. So without further ado, I want to thank you for tuning in to this episode of All Damn Night. Be sure to check us out on social media, All Damn Night on Twitter.
Make sure you subscribe.
To the podcast. We have a website coming up soon. Check us out on Instagram.com/AllDamnNightPodcast, Facebook.com, AllDamnNightPodcast. Am I forgetting anything?
Patreon.
We'll have a Patreon coming
and,
soon.
And Podomatic and iTunes, all that stuff.
All those platforms. So thanks again for tuning in. We will catch you next time on All Damn Night.